Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And on this Friday edition of the show, we have got a business owner, DJ, guitar slinger, among other things. But we'll get into that in a minute. Before I introduce today's guest, I want to ask you a question. How many of you participated in the Wednesday challenge? You can be honest. We're all friends here. It's okay. Whether you did or you didn't, I'm just happy you're here today. Because today is the day that you embrace the power of change. That's right. You can do it just like that. You don't have to go through some big, giant ordeal. You don't have to justify your reasoning for wanting to change, for hoping that things change, for feeling different today than you felt yesterday. You can give yourself permission, moment to moment, second by second, day to day, year to year, to change. It's all up to you. You have complete control to change your mind about how you feel about any given circumstance. How amazing is that? The fact that you can literally stop on a dime and decide, I'm going to do something different today and take an emotional risk. And then I'm going to figure out if it was worth it. And if it wasn't, I get another chance to do it right. And if it was, congratulations. You figured something out. Now what? It gets real exciting to know that you can start making some changes in your life. To know that you actually have the power to affect yourself and the world around you, your perception of the world around you. You can make decisions about how you feel about the things that you're seeing, you can tell yourself a whole other story about how you feel and literally change how you feel. It doesn't always work. That's the caveat. But man, when it does, there's nothing better than that. I was having a rough day today. Not only did I not get a lot of sleep, which is something I promise that I am trying to get better about. But I've got a lot of stressful things going on right now, and as much as I understand this power of change that I talk about, this power of perception that I talk about, I'm resistant to those things at first. I'm a little slow when it comes to that stuff, so it takes me a little while to come around. And you would think, knowing that about myself, I'd be able to change that too. And maybe I can. Maybe I can. Now, today on the show, we have got a fantastic conversation with Joshua Moyer. He's a father. In fact, his kids pop up a couple of times in the episode, and it's adorable. So if you're one of those people that has an aversion to cute things, there's going to be a couple of spots where this is going to be hard for you. But the rest of it, we get into the marrow of it. And I really love this conversation, and I really love this guy and his whole family. So, without further ado, let's talk to Josh Moyer.
Thank you. a little late in the day over here on the East Coast for me to have coffee. So,
oh yeah.
So forgive me for that part.
It's late for me too, but you know, I'm problematic. So,
if I'm playing a gig, I'm pounding coffee all day long. But if I'm like regular work weekish, I got to shut it off after a certain point.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. What instrument do you play?
I always joke that I play whatever you're going to pay me to play. Typically I sing and play guitar. I do a lot of solo stuff, and we have this Dave Matthews tribute band. But you know, over the years, I mean, I've been doing music for about 20 some years, which is enough. That's plenty.
Yeah.
I'm kind of over it. But I've done all kinds of different stuff. But yeah, typically, like, if I'm doing it, it's vocals and guitar. Yeah.
Well, you know, and Dave Matthews is definitely not known for being slouchy on the guitar department.
No, but it's weird, though. I mean, like, you're not shredding. You're not, like, playing, like, Steve Vai or anything like that. You know, like, you're not, like, a shred guy. You're just playing these weird chord voicings with weird hand shapes and stuff like that. But no, I just took one of my sons to see him 2 or 3 weeks ago. So it was his first show to see him live, and he was just blown away. He's nine. Nice. So he was like, said, you know, so these are, the company I work for, we spend a lot of money with iHeartRadio, so they got us the tickets. I told them, I said, not every concert's going to be like this. Sometimes you're going to have to, like, walk from your parking spot, you know, and slumming in the field or whatever you want to, you know.
Oh, yeah.
However it goes. So I said, you can't just, like, drive up and walk in normally. It's not a typical situation. So,
did you first start playing music?
Oh, boy, my shit's falling apart. Sorry. see that? Long time ago, man. I went to college and grad school for it, but I mean, I was playing, I mean, that was kind of like my only, like, interest, you know, for the longest, forever, for as long as I can remember. Of course, now as I kind of grown up and grown older and experienced the world a little bit, I realize there's a lot more to life than music, you know. Not that that's not important by any means. I don't mean to make it sound like that, but
no, but you have to find other things in your sphere. Otherwise, you're just going to stagnate as a person. I mean, you can't hang all of your hopes on everything, because, you know, if something doesn't work out, you know, you've kind of given all of your power as a human being over to something else.
Yeah, I agree completely. And you know, like I'm turning 40 next month, and I was just talking to someone about this yesterday. They said, "Oh, you know, do you get paid?" Because I had played a gig. Oh, I had to play a gig yesterday afternoon. That's what it was. So yeah. I was at church, and I was like, "Yeah, I got to go home and, like, load my gear and bounce, and I have to play this brewery and stuff." And the lady, just nice lady, she said, "Oh, do you get paid well for that?" I said, "Yeah, I get paid okay for it." She said, "Well, you'd probably do it for free even if you didn't." I said, "No, I wouldn't." I said, "No, I would not. Not at this point in the game. Like, I mean, I enjoy playing and stuff, but the business side of it never gets easier.
No,
you know, and no matter what field you're in, no matter what you're doing with your life, there's going to be difficult people. There's going to be crappy days and whatnot. But like, the business side of making music and booking gigs and, like, promoting your music and all that stuff and making sure people show up to your shows, you know, like, it just never gets easier. just never gets easier.
You know, one of the things that I've found, and maybe you can relate to this too, one of the things that that I noticed is that as I get older and as I get more proficient at instruments and playing them and songwriting and everything, it's actually become more difficult for me to write songs anymore, because I feel like something that I probably would have enjoyed 5 years ago, I hear it in my own head now, and I immediately dismiss it as lazy.
And you get super self-critical. Because you play drums in a band, right?
That's right.
And I also think, too, one of my very best friends here in Winston-Salem. He's actually plays lead guitar with me in the band. He's a single guy. He has a dog. I mean, he's still working. He's hustling. He's playing gigs. But, like, he posts these wonderful, grandiose thought processes on social media. And I think to myself, man, I wish I had time to think like that. Like, I wish I could have time to let my brain, you know, kind of renumerate on thoughts of that nature. And I remember, I used to just sit and pontificate and read all the time and have stacks of books. And I mean, I work full time, I gig full time, I have four kids, I have a fifth baby who's about to pop out any second. So I'm just busy, man.
And that's a lot.
You know, it's a lot. I mean, it's not unmanageable. I think people say, oh, how do you do it? Well, you do it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very utilitarian. Like 100%. People do what they have to do.
Yeah. You are a goldfish. You will adapt to the size of your tank.
Right. Right.
You know, if you allow yourself to. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I got a couple of kids and it's, that was a lot, but I mean, I inherited one, with my wife. And so now I got three kids and it's just how it works out. You know, it's like you just adjust. It's part of the process. It's like any other thing where it requires you to show up as a person. You just kind of have to know whether or not you're the kind of person who can show up. And sometimes you don't know that until you're forced to.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was never the type of person that I thought, I mean, crap, I didn't think I was going to live past 30, 35, whatever, let alone, you know, be a dad or anything like that. And I was, you know, I just get that a lot doing what, you know, of course, playing music and being a dad and stuff like that. Like, how do you, I'm like, it's not like I'm fighting a war in Palestine or like splitting an atom at CERN or something like that. I'm like, I'm just working and being a dad. That's not like crazy. People do it all the time. You know, it's not like a ridiculous situation that I'm being put into. You know, it's just, I just think people's perception is interesting, you know, especially, I mean, here in North Carolina is a, you know, totally different landscape of, you know, what I'm sure you experience out there, but it's just like, it's just interesting. I mean, I grew up in Pennsylvania, I grew up outside of Philadelphia. So, it's just different. Yeah, but
those are very different flavors.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The tri-state area is 100% different than anywhere down here.
Yeah.
You're just used to a different, speed and different way of talking to people. And even like a different walking. Like I get so annoyed, like walking behind people in just on the street or in the grocery store. I'm like, can you please speed up? Like what in the world? I don't know.
Well, there's that sense of urgency. You know, that maybe not everybody feels.
Right. It's all the biscuits and gravy.
That'll slow you right down.
Jim Gaffigan puts it very well. It's like eating, you know, paste. You're just like, they just slow people down. He has a great bit about it. I won't try to recreate it, but
yeah. You got a stomach full of wallpaper. It's like.
Absolutely. Wallpaper paste. Exactly what it is. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, man.
So you were saying a second ago, like that, you know, you didn't know if you were going to even survive into 30. I mean, what was the instance for you? Was it, were you a drugs guy or were you a sad guy?
No, I definitely wasn't a drugs guy. I was a sad guy and I was a party guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a drinker and, you know, I still try to mitigate that. It's just something that's conscious. I'm always trying to like keep that, you know, at a reasonable place.
Yeah, me too.
And, I grew up in a weird house, man. And like the second I got out of that house and I went to college, I was in college about 10 minutes before like, I was wide, like the definition of wide open. I'm like, oh, we can do this here? Like, game freaking on, man. Like, we're just like, woohoo! You know? And that very, very quickly and very intensely became my identity, you know? And I've always suffered with what's called suicidal ideation.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not always at the forefront, and it's not an immediate, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not an immediate crisis.
Yeah.
But it's still always there.
Yes.
Right?
Completely.
I always like to, and you probably can speak on this too, it's, I always talk about it like it's kind of an itch that's kind of like, some days it's like 10 feet away and some days it's like a foot away.
Yeah.
But it's always there, right? And that's, it's never anything I've acted upon, but it's a thought process that's always been, that's been with me for the longest time.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I was late 20s, early 30s until like I found a psychiatrist. He's like, dude, this is what you, like, you have this.
Yeah.
Like, oh, really? I thought I was just like a melodramatic, like, woe is me. Like, I'm going to.
Well, you were an artist.
Well, that's, I mean, and that's exactly like kind of what I define myself as. Like, oh, I'm this troubled artist and blah, 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 and all that bullshit. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Completely.
And that's exactly what it is. Because you see so many of these artists, so many people who go through that and come through on the other side are stone cold sober and making some of the best, creating some of the best things they've ever created.
Absolutely.
You know?
That's an interesting thing about that though, is that when you see someone, who's struggling with, suicidal tendencies or depression or something like that, mm-hmm. You know, and you're a teenager and then you see, you know, Kurt Cobain, up on the stage,
right.
You know, being very frank and very open about depression and things like that, you're like, oh, there's somebody out there who's making this normal. I'm that. But
right.
The downside to that is that it doesn't get the other piece of it, which is, yes, you may be that. But the problem is you're both fucked up. And you're not going to learn anything from each other at that point, other than you're not alone. But there's a whole other step after that, which is, now that I know that, what do I do with it? How do I fix it? How do I manage it? How do I take care of it and survive myself?
Right.
You know, and Cobain's a good example because he didn't.
Absolutely. I mean, you could go down the whole list. Cobain, you know, Chris Cornell,
yes.
Chester, which hit me like a ton of bricks, you know, Robbie Williams, all these people. And I think it's, I have found, now, this may be kind of a more glum way to look at it, but the more you realize that you may never be able to fix it,
yeah,
the more you realize that you have to learn how to manage it.
Oh, 1,000%.
It might never go away.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you might live with it your entire life. So the way you figure out, like, I'm like, I always call it my spiral. I'm too big of a Nine Inch Nails fan, so that's what I call it. That's what I call it. Like, when I get, like, in this, like, weird, like, toilet bowl situation, I'm like, okay, like, what is going on? How can I kind of shimmy back up this ladder, because it's just getting dark, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, my wife and I mean, we've had two very different experiences, and I think that's the beauty of, like, when two people come together, they share stuff, and you find that there are a lot more similarities and differences than a lot of people. You know, we've had a lot of very different upbringings, but, you know, we've, you know, really had to deal with losing people. Both my parents passed away very young from health stuff, not from mental health things. But we've lost people. We lost her sister to suicide, which I think I mentioned in my initial little post to you. And then my best friend, not a year. Oh, we're going on a year ago, drank himself to death, which is not directly termed a suicide, but I mean,
but it
let's
is.
Call let's call a spade a spade. You know, when you're not seeking, when you're not accepting the help that's given to you, and you're, you know, they always say, you know, some people say alcoholism is a choice. Well, yeah, alcoholism is a choice. You choose whether to have that first drink or not, because after that first drink, you don't have a choice after that.
Yeah. No. Exactly. Yeah, my father is an alcoholic. So, you know, he got to the point where he overcame it. And, you know, just doesn't drink because he can't. He's like, I can't have a drink. I have to have all the drinks.
Right.
You know, that's just how it goes. I'm not one of those people that can just pay attention to it and be careful. You know,
right.
Luckily,
right.
I'm one of those people who can pay attention to it and be careful. But since I know I have it in me, I
right.
really am careful about it. It makes me nervous.
And you have to be. And I yeah. think, too.
Because alcohol is crazy.
It's ridiculous. And I think, too, in the certain industry that you're in, like you play drums in a band,
yeah.
you know, when you're in music, like it's a whole other ball game. And
oh,
like some people think, oh yeah, no, like that's just, you're just saying that. No, it's true.
Yeah.
It's freaking everywhere.
It
it's
is.
Everywhere you are. It, you never have to pay for it. Like it's just a different, it's
yeah.
a whole different scenario. Like,
yeah.
You're like, oh yeah. So you just open whatever. Yeah, sure. Okay, fine. Like, let's go.
yeah.
you know?
And if you're not a person who's fully in control of yourself, because the thing is this, I mean, you mentioned about your friend, and I mean, and I'm obviously definitely sorry to hear that, because the thing about a situation like that, it's an undiscussed version of suicide. It's a version
Absolutely.
Of suicide people don't really talk about. And I think the reason they don't talk about it is because it's a version of suicide that a person who doesn't have a suicidal ideation could see themselves touching, you know, but for a circumstance. Because when you're drinking up to a certain point, you are very aware of the danger. You're aware that you're going to get – you're aware when the buzz comes in, and you're aware when you're drunk. You're not necessarily in complete control over continuing to drink or not, especially if you're, you know, if you're really in it.
Mm-hmm.
But you are aware of the risks, you know, especially when you wake up the next day and you go, what did I do?
Right.
You're aware. And so it is a thing where you're pretty sure that this could happen, and it's an option for how you're going to go. And it's
right, because
that's a rough one. That's really rough.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, and you can only help someone so much, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, there is only so much that you can do for another person. You can't, you know, it's not like if someone's choking and you can give them a Heimlich maneuver. It's not like that.
Yeah.
You know, like you cannot immediately say to them, hold on 1 second. Yes, Nathan, what's up? Okay, good night. I have say good night. Hang on.
No problem.
I'll see you in the morning. Okay. I'll come kiss you before bed. My little studio down here. so, and two, there's a, I don't know that it's so much, I don't want to call it a shame involved, because I don't want to like speak ill of someone who's in that process, but
yeah,
but there's a certain part of it where, you know, they don't want to hear about it.
Yeah.
Like they don't want to hear what you have to say about it because they're not comfortable with it themselves.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting, especially as, you know, the more and more, like when I got diagnosed with all the interesting stuff that's going on in my brain years ago, I got thinking about, like, you know, maybe this is something I want to pursue as a career down the road or what have you. And really that kind of forced mental health issues kind of the forefront of my head and just kind of shaped the way I was looking at the world. And like, you know, and you see it out there where you are, because, you know, you have all these veterans moving to Colorado
yeah.
to get better mental health care and better medication regimens and stuff like that. You know, my father did 2 tours as a sniper in Vietnam, and he was what they called shell shock.
Yeah.
You know, in the 80s and 90s before
oh, yeah.
PTSD was a term, right?
Right.
And he passed. I mean, I was 22 when he passed away, and I remember, like, he just, like, the man couldn't do fireworks. Like, he would have these terrible, like, debilitating nightmares and, like, cold sweats and all this, you know, shit like this that, like, nowadays would be treated. At the time, he was like, oh, this dude was just, he was just a vet. He was just a vet, period. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, like, and all his friends were the same damn way. Like, you know, and they didn't have the resource, and we still don't have as good of resources as we could have for our veterans. But
definitely,
I mean, you know, at that time it was almost non-existent.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the first.
It was a punchline. I mean, think about how many movies we saw where, you know, there was a you know, the crazy veteran who went through the war and, you know, duck and cover when they hear a popcorn machine. You know, it's like
it was
a punchline to the jokes. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I mean, we're definitely a lot more sensitive to that now, especially as we discover the ways in which, you know, just average people starting to raise their hand more often saying,
right.
Yeah, I think I'm having some trouble too. And I think I'm going to say something out loud about it. And we're all discovering, okay, yeah, I think we all have something going on.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. I think that's an excellent way to put it, getting people to raise their hand, because even to this day, you know, we all have, whether it be societal stigmas or family stigmas, like in the same family I grew up in, like, oh, we don't go to therapy, or like, we don't go to a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
Although, yeah, you're probably the one who should.
Yeah. And,
like, you know, like, damn it, you should go to a psychiatrist, you know?
You know, pry the caulk out of your tear ducts. Let's get something going.
And, you know, my wife's grandfather was a big theologian at Emory College in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And he always said, you know, everybody needs therapy of various different kinds.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you need family therapy, or maybe you need individual therapy, or maybe you need, you know, marital therapy or whatever. Hold on, there's another one. Hey, man. You go to bed and I'll be up in a minute, okay? See? Okay. All right. I love you. You go lay down with mama. I'll be up in a minute. Okay? All right, love you. That's just a background so we don't have to see all the air ducts behind my head. Okay. All right. Sorry.
It's all right.
Where was I?
Therapy.
I don't remember.
Your grandfather, the theologian.
Oh, yeah. My wife's grandfather. So just, you know, everybody needs someone to talk to. Like, and that's the biggest problem. You know, I do social media for a living nowadays, and I run like over 100 accounts, and it's like, and I love it. It's interesting, but at the same time, social media is just like tearing our psyches apart.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just turning us into these, like, oh boy, I don't know.
Well, I think it's, again, another one of those things where it can be used for good. There's a lot of value in social media. It allows people to connect over long distances. It allows you to meet people all over the world. I think that the area where we might be getting into trouble, and maybe you can speak to this, is that we're doing more of that and less face-to-face.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, they did that study with, you know, years and years and years ago, showing that if babies are left unattended, they're well fed and everything like that, but they have no human contact, they'll die.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it's kind of silly to think that there's not at least some of that still in us as we get older.
No, I agree 100%. And I mean, I find it astounding. And I try never to, like... Like, I'll have my phone with me, like, when I'm at home, but, like, I have it in my pocket, you know? Or, like, I'll be streaming music to it or something like that.
Yeah.
But, like, never have it out at the dinner table. Like, when I go out to eat with my wife, or even when I go out to eat with my whole family, like, the phone's never out. And you see, like, so many people just sitting there not talking to each other.
Yeah.
And so that's one aspect of it. Like you said, like the lack of interpersonal communication, and the lack of, you know, what did my son ask me this morning? He said, can we make a video of my Minecraft Lego thing? I said, sure. Why do you want to make a video? He said, to put it on YouTube. I said, well, why do you want to put it on YouTube? He said, so that people can watch it. I thought, oh no.
It started.
Yeah. And then two, there's the whole other element of it where we're, you know, justifying what you're doing by your online engagement.
Yeah.
Right. Now, from a business perspective, it's one thing.
Yeah.
You're trying to sell a product. You're trying to do this or that. You're trying to have revenue and have cost effectiveness. That I get.
Yep.
That there's a place for. But when you're judging your personal human equivalent,
yeah.
as to, you know, whether someone likes or comments on your photo, or, you know, we have these horrible things where people are getting bullied online.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because like, think about it. Like, you know, Coke can put up an ad and everybody says, ah, Coke sucks, you know, and a handful of people like it and some people don't. Coke doesn't care.
No.
But, you know, if you put up a picture of yourself in a Coke t-shirt and someone's like, ah, that's an ugly person, you know, that t-shirt's too big for you, you look like garbage,
right.
Go home, like, Pepsi's better, you suck. Like, it almost feels like, you know, they're not attacking a brand, they're not attacking a thing you did. It feels like they're attacking you. And in some cases, they really are attacking you. It's very personal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, bullying is bad enough in person. You know, like bullying sucks as it is when you're like face to face with someone. And we've all gotten it for various reasons, you know.
Sure.
You know, I use my wife as a reference. She got bullied for being too skinny in school. I got bullied for being too fat. I mean, they'll bully you for anything. It doesn't matter.
Completely.
Like, people just pick on you for whatever. But, like, it's bad enough in person.
Yeah.
Right? But when it's online, I think when you get bullied online, like, you see something on your phone, right?
Yeah.
You see this bullying thing come through, and then you're, like, stuck there to, like, cycle, like, and kind of fester in this, like, and you keep going back to it.
Yeah.
You can keep going back to that comment, right? And say, oh man, you know, like, you get bullied in the schoolyard, you go home, you know, for the day, and hopefully you have a nice, you know, healthy, encouraging home to go home to, and it's different.
Yeah.
Right? At least if you're gonna be bullied the next day at school, at least hopefully you have, you know, a little respite from it.
Right.
You know, but if that comment is there and you can go back to it anytime you want.
Yeah.
That's when things get dicey.
Well, and there's, you know, there's two other aspects to that too. The one being, you know, you're by yourself. It's weirdly, lonely, you know, to get bullied through your phone, you know, the device that you count on for your entertainment, your news, and your connection to the world. We've tied it all into this. And, now this thing has suddenly attacked you and you're by yourself. You're completely by yourself. And there's no way to see where the assailant's going to come from, because the assailant's with you all the time waiting for you in your pocket. Is it going to happen again? Is it going to happen again? And then the other piece of that is, everybody's gotten a text that they read the text in the tone they choose to hear it in.
Absolutely.
And so
100%.
You're almost kind of beating yourself up, like, worse than they were at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas in person, I don't know, like, you could see the person walk away. You could hear their tone of voice. It was almost like the impact was shorter, you know, like a punch versus 1,000 tiny pokes wherever you go.
Right.
Yeah, that's wild. Well,
and you're right. You could read something like exactly what you just said. take it one way and the person calls you 5 minutes later and that's not at all what they meant, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah.
You know, that happens all the time in business, you know?
Oh, like, yeah.
Why is this guy being such a jerk, man? What the hell? And then you email him back and he's like, no, man, I didn't mean anything by it. Like, okay, all right, whatever, fine, sorry.
Yeah, I tend to text swiftly and curtly. And mm-hmm. so my friends definitely are always like, what did you mean by this?
Yeah, yeah.
I meant okay.
Right.
I just wrote exactly. you a paragraph and you just wrote okay. Yeah. Yeah. I read it.
Yeah. I read it. We're good, man. We're good. And two, you know, the whole other, and this is a multifaceted thing that we've just kind of stumbled upon without the foresight of thinking what it would do to our psyches, you know, because then the whole other thing to think about is, people can be a lot better, are a lot braver with their, they have a lot more cojones to be a bully when they're behind a screen or behind a phone.
Oh, easy. Yeah.
Then standing up to someone's face, you know, that's a whole other schoolyard to play in, right?
Yeah.
so we've kind of in the past, I mean, I don't know exactly when the first smartphone came around, what, let's say 15 years ago, 10 years ago, what have you.
Yeah.
You know, in the past 10 years, we've stumbled upon this like psychological nightmare, basically. And there's no end to it. I mean, like, short of like the singularity coming and like just the robots destroying us all, like, it's not like we're all as humanity going to say, you know what, let's go back to the rotary phone. That's never going to happen. Right.
Yeah. Like,
we're not going to go backwards. It's
we are
worse.
The part in history that the future is going to look back at and say, can you believe these jackasses?
I know. Can you believe we did that? I mean, hell, we have, you know, Elon Musk, who I think is a genius, by the way, but
yeah.
like has the whole Neuralink thing where he's implanting, you know, chips into your brain to weave in with your synapses and stuff like that. Like, it's just going to keep getting worse.
Yeah,
you know?
It is. It's just going to make it so we go right back to being able to be bored and uninterested without phones.
Like, right.
We'll just have the chip in our head.
Right.
Just sitting there, making like, a face, nothing in your hands.
Yeah. Well, think about it. Think about it like this. Like, when you get home from, like, I'll use this example for myself and you can probably relate. When you get home from a gig, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Your ears are ringing a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, your family's asleep. You kind of just want to chill out. What do? You probably sit. I sit on the couch with my dog, have a beer or so.
Yep.
And I don't put on Netflix.
Yeah.
You have thousands of options, but you can't pick a damn one. You
right.
just watch the same thing. I'll watch The Hangover for the 50th time because yeah. I can't pick a movie. Like, how ridiculous. Like,
choice paralysis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. How, like, that's just the silliest thing. Like, if you were, you know, a kid in the 90s, like walking through a Blockbuster and someone said, I have thousands of movies at my disposal and I can't even begin to pick one. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
These kids would be like, man, that sounds stupid to me.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was a. I mean, there was something that was sort of formative about that. It was an interesting yeah. time. I think it's pretty wonderful to, you know, be a daywalker in this time. You know, like, be able to say yeah. I remember Blockbuster Video, but also
Absolutely.
Say I now have, you know, this amazing technology. And
like,
you know,
I remember
Netflix
it, but I don't
everything.
Miss it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You kind of
yeah,
know what you're missing, but in a way right. it almost helps, to keep you sort of mindful, you know, mm-hmm. and to bring it back around and tie it together. It actually is that same sort of thought process of being able to recognize something from your past and reconcile it with where you are now and who you are as a human being. Mm-hmm. It's the exact same kind of process with your suicidal ideation, because right. if you're a person that knows that you have that and you remember when it was more of a struggle mm-hmm. to figure out what it was and how to maintain a life without it, especially as a teenager, when there's so many other things going on. and right. everything is so important. And mm-hmm. then as an adult, you've got to make some decisions on how you're going to manage things. How right. serious is it? What are you going to do? And to be able to remember that you lived through all of that and you're mm-hmm. still here now, you should be able to learn something from all of that.
Right. Right. I agree. And also, you know, to put ourselves kind of in that mindset of, like, you know, whether you have kids or not, and the younger generation in this era, like, you only post happy, scrappy stuff online, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like not everybody looks good all the time.
Right.
You know, not everybody has a great day all the time, but you're not going to post like, man, I feel like shit today.
Right.
Generally. I mean, some people do. I mean, but generally, you know, that because that doesn't get engagement. That doesn't get likes and blah, 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 all that shit.
No, but you know what it does? It gets people worried.
It gets people worried.
The moment you're a little too real, people are so used to seeing, you know, it's an unspoken social contract. People mm-hmm. are used to seeing the version of yourself that you put forward. And the moment right. you say anything that's down or negative, if it was a conversation in real life, you'd be able to say, yeah, I don't know. I'm just not feeling it today. Things are rough and whatever. But, you know, there's some other things going on. I'm working through it. So how was your day at work? It would be that kind of conversation. But right. when you put it out online, I'm not feeling right. it today. Just nothing's going right. I think I'll try again tomorrow. It's like, are you okay? What's going on?
Yeah.
What's happening? Yeah. Like, it's just chaos because people are like, yeah, I don't know if I signed up for this kind of reality.
Right, right, right. And you're like, yeah. And then things get awkward. And
yeah. You're taking this out of context. Like, everybody right. has a bad day. You know,
absolutely.
I'm not going to kill myself just because I'm thinking about killing myself.
Right, right. Yeah, it's an interesting, like I said, I'm fascinated by it, I can kind of like step out of my own brain and be like, I'm fascinated by that concept
yeah.
of the ideation.
Yeah.
Like the concept of it just like fascinates me. And like I said, I think having, found a really good doctor recently in the past decade, you know, who put almost a title on it and mm-hmm. reminded me that like it is a real thing.
Yeah.
It is. You're not this just like doomsday, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
However you want to put it. But like it's a real thing. It can be, you know, it can be managed. We can, you know, and you probably know. I mean, like I've been through a huge, you know, it's a process.
Yes.
Figuring out what works and what doesn't. You know, you're not going to like, it's not going to be one day you're going to, you know, start taking something and a medication of some sort and you're fixed right away. And,
yeah.
You know, that's.
It doesn't work that way.
In fact, sometimes it can get worse, which is a whole other. I mean, that's a whole other. We can do a whole other episode about that. But
have you been through a couple of cocktails of medication?
I've been through a few. I was originally put on like a horse dose of Klonopin, which did not bode well for anybody. Like I'm 6'5", 300 pounds. Like, and they would put me on like, I think as much as you could put somebody on like, and
did the cap come with a shovel?
It did. It did come with a shovel and like a beer bong, which was odd. And so that was before I found this psychiatrist who I've been with now for about a decade. And when I went to him and took him the stuff that I was on after I had a particularly, let's say, close incident with the ideation. I mean, I didn't act on anything, but I was getting much closer to thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I went in, he said, dude, like, and I was working like 80 hours. I was just working my butt to the bone, making poor choices about things. And, you know, he said, dude, like, you're on enough to put a horse down. Like, he's like, why are you on this, man? I said, I don't know. My family doctor told me to take it. What are you on? He's like, oh, God. Okay, here you go. So yeah, so that obviously didn't work, but yeah, so I think I've been on the same stuff now for about 5 years, and it's pretty solid, you know, again, knowing that there's, you know, good days and bad days, and I still have stressful, you know, triggers and whatnot, and I find that I still get it when I see people who have like committed suicide themselves. That still kind of hits me like a ton of bricks, you know?
Yeah, that hits me hard every time too. Like even people that I'm not like, you know, if they're public people, but I didn't really know them, you know, didn't know their work even. Like when Kate Spade died, there was something weird about that that just, it just broke my heart.
Or you know, like Anthony Bourdain or in the past 2 weeks, I've had two people, both from back home in Pennsylvania. One was this girl's son who was 18, killed himself. And another was this girl's brother who was a veteran, struggled with PTSD and addiction and killed himself all within a week of each other. And, you know, I didn't know. I've never met either of those people.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's kind of third or fourth degree of separation, what have you, but still at the same time, it kind of hits you in your guts a little bit. You're like, oh.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you've been a person with a suicidal ideation, you can really empathize with somebody who's had those feelings, and it gets a little scary because, you know, like you said, some days it's closer than others. But the days when it's close, it can be terrifying because you're it's just how many more notches away before that's me?
Right.
Can I survive myself?
Because like how close does this have to get?
Yeah. It's a rough one. But with your particular, let's say, brand of suicidal ideation, is that something that... Like, are you able to have those thoughts come into your head at random and still just go about your day like nothing happened? Or do they still affect you?
They still stick to me a little bit, you know? I mean, I don't think they'll, like, ruin my day.
Mm-hmm.
I think I get more of, like, the self-destructive side of it.
Yeah?
You know? Like, I feel like I'm a lot more self-destructive than I need to be. But no, they certainly do. I mean, like I use that phrase like it's just something you can't shake off of you right away. You know, like because you get that it's a passing thought, but at the same time, it kind of goes past you. But it's like it kind of splashed some crap on you.
Yeah,
like, oh, yeah.
Well, and you see it often enough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the fun part about the ideation versus just you know, say like a normal suicidal thought, like if there is such a thing, is usually triggered by some sort of external stimulus or event, you know, that makes you feel as if the bottom has dropped out and things are hopeless. But with the ideation, it's just completely random. It just pops in. It's like your brain just fills in a weird blank, you know, like... When, you know, I used to tell people that it's like, you know, I wake up in the morning and it's like, you know, I could brush my teeth or I could kill myself. I'm going to brush my teeth, you know, or I could make a cup of coffee or I could kill myself.
Right.
I guess I'll make a cup of coffee.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it just comes in, you know, the waiting for the train, like, I wonder how hard that train hits. Like it just comes in at random and it's one of those things, but... You know, now, for me, mostly because I've lived with it as long as I have, for the most part, you know, it's like I'm going to teach unicorns basket weaving is just as realistic as, you know, I'm going to see what the front of this bus smells like.
Right.
They're kind of in the same category, but there are definitely days where it's closer. And it's scarier. And yeah, you're right. It's like it splashes something on you and you're just like, all right, I'm going to wear the suicide cologne today.
Right. So yeah, like some days, and I you know, like if you're I drive a lot, so I use this example a lot. Like you're driving, you're like, you know, I could just like pop, right? Like yes. One way or another. it's a little bit scary because how easily that thought comes to your brain.
Yeah.
You're like, I could just like, you know, I'm driving up this mountain. I could just woohoo, just yeah. Right off, you know?
I thought everybody thought like that. And then I would say something like that to someone and they'd look at me and go, no.
Right. What? Yeah.
Has that happened to you? Like, have you ever talked about absolutely. This with people?
Absolutely. Yeah. You talk, and they're like, no, like, I don't, like you said, they're like, no, I don't really think like that. Or if you talk about it with people and they're like, oh my God, you too? I'm like, oh, good.
Yes.
Like, at least I talk to someone who gets it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and then my, that opens the door to me being like, you know, hey, like, cause I will talk to any, I will tell my story to anybody. You know, if I think that's, even if I don't think it's going to help them, if they ask me, I'm very like, you know, transparent about it. Like,
yeah,
I have no shame in the fact that I'm on medication. I have no shame in the fact that like, I might have to take stuff for my brain till the day I die. Like, that's fine with me. Like, I have no problems with it.
Yeah.
You know, I have a good, really good therapist. I've recommended him to several people. And I'm more than happy to do so. I've made calls to him directly for friends of mine and been like, hey, like, this guy can't get on your schedule. Can you work him in? Like, you know, he really needs to see you. Like, I have no shame in it whatsoever.
Well, and that's how it should be.
Right. But there's still such, I mean, we're in 2019. There's still such a stigma, involved with it. I mean, like, we have weed legal all over the place. You guys have shrooms legal. We should be able to like not have to worry about mental health being such a weird thing. And especially, you know, like with what went down this weekend with all this horrible tragedies this weekend. And yes, there are gun law ramifications. Yes, there's so much that needs to be done on that side of it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I do not disagree with that at all. Ever. However, to say that it is not also a mental health thing is not doing it justice.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, because it does all kind of go hand in hand.
Right.
You know, but I mean, not to get political or anything, but the very idea that, you know, we're not really interested in talking about guns. But we are interested in talking about mental health when guns come up and pivoting to that. It always strikes me that, you know, well, then why can't we at least start by passing a law that says if you have mental health problems, maybe you shouldn't have a bazooka.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I know the kind of damage I could do with just a pair of scissors and some time.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm with you 100%. Yeah. And it's always like, part of me, like, I just like to scroll through. Now, again, like when I'm at work, I have like three monitors. I have like 18,000 tabs open. I'm monitoring all this stuff.
Yeah.
But especially when stuff, you know, after this past weekend, just going through so much of what people are talking about and just, you know, it's just not, I mean, like I said, it's not a singular thing on either side of the issue, whether it be a gun thing or a mental health thing, but you have to put the two together, you know?
Yeah. And I would have to imagine that going through all of these various things, all of these posts and seeing this many people have conversations and sometimes disrespectful and sometimes disjointed, I would imagine that after a while, that's going to wear on you.
Yeah. And you're just like, And then, you know, and then you have some people that are like, oh, well, your hopes and prayers are doing a lot. Like, but sometimes people don't know what to say.
Yeah, it's not nothing.
Like, let them not know what to say and send their best wishes, their best vibes, their best prayers, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Like, not everyone knows exactly how to verbalize what they want to say in the aftermath of such a horrible thing.
I understand your anger, but this is not the place that deserves it.
Right.
Especially not if someone's trying to do something nice. But, you know, so as we're winding down here, let me ask you this. As far as everything that you've gone through and where you are now and how it's all working, do you feel like you've developed a set of tools that's working pretty well for you now?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is one of them right here. So, you know. No, but you have to have something. You have to have things to live for.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and we all have our own skill sets. And that's another thing about modern society that I could go on a tangent with, but I won't. But that certain skill sets are far more important than others. Right? Or far more valuable, not in terms of monetary, but certain are, you know, like if you're a sports player, you're more valuable than someone who's like an exceptional plumber.
Yeah.
Like that's bull. You know, like we all have our own gifts that have been given to us by whatever creator you believe in.
Yeah.
You know, and so we're all good at something. We might not know it. might not know what that thing is, or we might be good at, you know, more than one thing, and we have to figure out what to focus on at any given time. But like, not even like doing, just kind of knowing that inherently you're good at something, and that you can be purposeful in day to day human existence.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of what I've, you know, come to learn. And looking back, you know, I'm 39, like I said, I'm turned 40. And now that I keep cranking out all these children, you know, life, like when, for example, like when you're 18 and like graduating high school or whatever, going to college, whatever you do, going to trade school or whatever, like what you think life is not at all what life is like. You know what I mean? Like it is not a fraction of what you think is important then is what's really important.
Yeah. Life knows how to throw you a curveball. That's for
absolutely,
sure.
Absolutely.
But you got to be willing to run with that and find the purpose and the joy in where you are and not lament where you could have been or whatever, because it's where you are right now and the version of yourself that you are right now is the best version of you that has ever existed and has the potential to be better tomorrow.
Right. Right. You know, and worrying about the past or worrying about the future are equally damaging.
Yes.
I think worrying about the past is more so.
Yeah.
Because what the heck are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And now that's one thing I still struggle with quite a bit. I will be quite frank with you. You know, that's one thing you gotta just get over. And I haven't really come that whole let go and let God thing. I can't deal with that. I have no idea how, I don't even know how to like be in the same zip code as that concept. I have no idea.
Yeah.
And you know, I have a lot of people who are farther along with me and not just in their Christian beliefs, but in their spiritual beliefs and how they deal with that, that are much farther ahead than I am. Like, oh, you just gotta, you know, just let it go. It's like, I have no idea what you just said.
It's a process.
I want to.
It takes a lot of time. I mean, the thing to do now with the version of yourself that you are now is recognize that you're letting go as well as you can today.
Right.
And maybe perhaps you'll get better at it tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, I think we're really hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, I think mentally we can be really, I think you can be really down on yourself too. And to try to mitigate that. I think that's part of that's the ideation that I experience and that you probably experience. I think you tend to be harder on yourself than someone, I hate to use the word normal, but someone new normal might be.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, but you know, I mean, Like, if you're not your biggest advocate, who's gonna be? Right? That might sound a little cliche, but
you know, the pasta still sticks to the wall on that one, though.
Right. Right. So you have to, if you have to like yourself first, and again, complete transparency, I struggle with that big time. I struggle with that big time. There's stuff from my past that I'm still trying to get over, that like whole, like, well, I don't really like myself very much. And my wife, if that ever comes out of my mouth, my wife's like, you know, that's not a really attractive trait. You need to figure out, like, she's like, 'cause I like you very much. Like, I married you, we had kids together. Like, I like you very much. You're awesome. But the fact that you don't like yourself is a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, how do you unpack that? You know, that's a big concept.
Yeah.
To kind of extrapolate and figure out, okay, well, not only why don't I like myself, but how do I like myself?
Yes.
I might be going off the rails a little bit, but, you know, are you hammering nails? Oh, great. I give a 4-year-old a hammer.
What could go wrong?
that's true. You know, again, 4 boys, I should have like one of those punch cards to the Minute Clinic. It's you never know when you might need it. But so I mean, I have a lot to say on topic, obviously. It's just something I think about a lot, and I wish more people thought about it. You know, I think we could save a lot more people, and even whether we save them by saving their life or we save them from having a miserable existence, you know, those are two different things, but equally important.
Absolutely.
You know? So I'm always more than happy, and I probably have diarrhea of the mouth talking about it at times, as you've seen over the past hour, but, you know, I'm always more than happy to talk about it with someone. I always love when people ask me like, hey, can I talk to you for a minute or you know, open up or you know, if I'm on a drive with someone and say, hey, tell me about this or that, or, you know, I'm always more than happy to be like, all right, what do you want to hear? Where do you want to start? Like, let's go.
Well, I think today you've probably saved a lot of people from a horrible commute.
Well, so, I hope so.
Thanks for talking to me.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. Yeah, man.
This was a really good time. Aren't you glad you showed up for this? If you want to get more Josh, and I know you do, you can find everything he's got going on at his Facebook page or at his website, dichotomyllc.com. As for me, next week, that is August 31st, I will be playing my debut solo album, King Stick, under the name Beast 4 at Three Kings in Denver. And that's all I got for this week. Remember to love and appreciate the people in your life because, quite frankly, they help make all of this worth living. And don't forget to take some emotional risks once in a while. And while you're at it, don't kill yourselves out there.